Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Si, you mean to tell me that feeding ducks bread kills them?
Don't come at me like I'm some sort of authority. That's what I've heard. Everyone's wrong, apparently.
Yeah, you said you saw some old people throwing loaves of bread at
ducks. It wasn't like they had a bag full of bread, but it wasn't like the bag that the bread comes in. It was like a carrier bag they just mashed a load of bread into.
My entire life, it was just like birds, ducks, whatever, some sort of bread, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. But
I don't know. Apparently not. Do a Google. Come on.
Yeah, we've got all the information right in front of us. Speaking of things right in front of us, Si, you're joining me this week because Jules is getting pulled into meetings left, right, and centre. The Future Game Show doesn't abate for the usual Friday Untitled Banter podcast slot, so the man's away doing a business yet again. But it doesn't matter because we're filled with good bods. Si White, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm in a great mood. We've had a wonderful week.
I know. We have a lovely little week. Lovely little week in person, recording all sorts of different things, and which will be rolling out across the next few weeks. We recorded a bunch of quizzes, which we both did very well in. No one knows yet. No one knows how we really did. So keep your eyes on the channel for those things. We've got some quizzes. We did a whole bunch of chatties in person. We've got some lovely little bits of content. But speaking of lovely little things, this is the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, the UBP. Si, you might not know what this intro is, but it's the UBP.
I've actually been on... Scott, I hate to tell you, I've been on this show like twice before.
You might have done. My memory's horrendous, as you well know.
Yes.
But we always ask for people's talking points, questions, whatever little things they'd like us to talk about. And I thought I'd ask people what the most overlooked Final Fantasy was as well, mainly because I finished Final Fantasy VI this week and I started Final Fantasy IV alongside 16. I kind of wanted to just do a little check-in. I want to see where the community is at in regards to what the most overlooked installments are. So I want to get your thoughts on this in a sec. But we had some replies from people. Kaylee B. Saxby saying all the Final Fantasy VII spin-offs are the most overlooked. How can people be mad about more Final Fantasy VII? Of course they aren't like the main game that they're spun off from. That's the point. Let me live my edgelord vampire power fantasy, which is very much a nod to Dirge of Cerberus, one of the most hated games of the 2000s. And we also had VK's Vikings Personal Training saying Final Fantasy 15 is massively overlooked and hated on, but there's so much to love. The bromance and companionship between the four leads is beautiful. You see the ups and downs of their relationships with a stellar script and awesome voice acting. Ash Trobot saying Final Fantasy 8 is the most easily overlooked, with Jack Jingle saying the same thing. Amazing music and fun, and a fun convoluted story. And then Adam saying Final Fantasy 9 feels overlooked. It's definitely appreciated by the hardcore Final Fantasy fans, but most others overlook it despite all the charm it has. It's an ode to the classic Final Fantasies overall. Otherwise, the spin-offs, Tactics Advance and Vagrant Story.
Wow.
What do you think for the most overlooked one? The old school stuff.
There's a thing, we call it the Code Veronica effect over on First Days Play Podcast, where enough people something is overrated, it just becomes rated. And I feel like now, and I absolutely see the viewpoints with 8, 9 less so. I think people really like 9, but enough people say FF8 is underrated that I don't know if it is underrated at this point, but I absolutely see why people say. I mean, I really enjoy Final Fantasy VIII, so
I told you when we were hanging out this last week, and we were talking about Final Fantasy, as is our want. And I was talking about when I played Final Fantasy VII as a kid, not knowing the way the saga worked or anything like that, and going out to buy Final Fantasy VII. It wasn't in stock, but VIII was. And I was literally Nigel Tufnell Spinal Tap, just going like, well, it's one better, isn't it? I'll just get that. That's got to be the sequel or whatever. How could I go wrong? And then just playing through, that was my first one, playing through Final Fantasy VIII. And so I've always got a soft spot for that game. Like, I've always loved the I mean, the music stands out anyway.
It wasn't the first Final Fantasy game that I played, but it was the first one I owned myself and played myself. I remember I have a memory of sitting in like a restaurant. We must have picked it up, and then while we were out and went for dinner with my family, I remember sitting in a restaurant flicking through the instruction manual and being like, okay, so this guy's the cloud.
I'll tell you what, I miss instruction books. I miss poring over physical things on the car ride back home. I think, I don't know. I feel like I've talked about this quite a lot in terms of like the age group that me and you are both in, but like the idea of reading through instructions, matching like little bits of the streetlights. You're in the back seat of the car. And you can read a little bit per streetlight on the way home. I feel like, like you said, Final Fantasy IX kind of gets up there with Final Fantasy VII as like the main two old school ones that you would give someone. Mm. Like, I forget who was talking to, maybe me or you, during the week about where they should start with Final Fantasy. And I said IX as like just a go. I mean, I love VII, but I just feel like you could give everyone IX, and it's so well written and everything. It's kind of like the most well-rounded one.
Yeah, I remember we were saying, you know, because it released at the end of the PlayStation 1, at that point, they really knew what they could get out of that machine, and they made the absolute most out of it, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So we'll get through as many questions as we can, which is to say, hopefully we'll get through more than three. Me and Jules tend to average about three, but we've got plenty more than three, so a massive thank you to everybody for sending them in. First one from David Goh, who says, what is our favourite game trailer slash advertisement of all time? Even though it was CG, the original Gears of War with Mad World playing always stuck with me. Also, GTA 5's Michael's slash Radio Gaga trailer is still better than most movie trailers today. What's your all-time favorite?
I'm going to pick another really obvious one. I love the Halo 3 stuff with the big model. What was it called? Believe, I think it's just called that, where it's like all the sort of military dudes that served alongside Master Chief.
Oh, the little miniature, like the
and they're looking
diorama
back on,
type thing.
Looking back on the war that you're about to take place in the game that you're about to take part in, and they're looking back on what it was like. Interesting perspective to have on a game, because it's not only is it not showing you the game, which is a bit of a faux pas, but it's not here's the game taking place in the present. It's like, here's what happens after the game. Now you could take place in the events they're talking about.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the art, there was such a thing to like 2000s trailers, but I mean, Halo 3 was a thing all to itself. Like, I've long said my favorite trailer of all time is that I think it's E3 2006 or 2007, whatever the Halo 3 reveal was, with the it's Chief walking through the smoke, it's Cortana's voiceover, it's the
piece of piano,
the shield. Yeah, the little bit like dun dun dun, like that makes me tear up every time.
Me too.
It's beautiful. And so like I feel like, I mean, obviously there was a lot more anticipation around then. It was like Bungie kind of knew what they had, and there was all the development hell around too. So it was like, we're kind of waiting for this really big deal that Halo 3 was going to be. And we haven't had that in gaming for a while. Like, there hasn't been any long-standing franchises where we're like dying for the next story chunk kind of thing. Like something where you can really nail the trailer reveal.
It's the next big one has got to be GTA 6, isn't it? That is the unifying moment. Like, you cannot deny that that's going to be the biggest thing ever when it comes out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that trailer is going to be one of those make or break. Well, not even break. It's just going to be make moment. There's no way they don't hit with it, right? It's going to be massive.
I wonder how many or which company will throw the most money at Rockstar so that they get the... Yeah, just like the Rockstar logo comes on screen. Like, whatever that's in front of will be a huge deal. But yeah, me and you both on the Halo train. Halo 3 was life-defining. Like, did you get the special editions? Did you fork out for the fancy ones?
Not for 3. I got Halo 2s. I've got Halo 2s that was sort of... It's Steelbook, before Steelbooks are really a popular thing. But
Where do you come down on Steelbooks? I've talked about Steelbooks quite a lot. Are you a Steelbook gal?
I'd be more inclined to buy a special edition that has a steelbook if it didn't also come with a regular case. I don't want two cases on the side.
That's become like
for
a thing
game.
These days. You get one of each, and it's like, no, I'm building a collection here. I don't want like an extra thing.
Yeah, just put the game in the steelbook. It's not that hard. Nintendo do it all the time. I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's like Link's Awakening. They gave me it was a Game Boy, like the Steelbook looked like a Game Boy, but then you also got the regular one as well, and I'm just like, this is just a useless
piece of plastic
at this point. No, Link's Awakening.
They did that for the Metroid 2 remake as well. I bought the special edition for that. It came with a really cool sort of Steelbook case that looked like the Game Boy cartridge. But then it also came with a regular case as well. Okay, cool. So this just goes back in the box then, I guess.
Do you want some more plastic? Question from Sloth Bush, who says, remake one, delete one, play one for the first time, Burnout 3 Revenge, Elder Scrolls Oblivion, Resident Evil Outbreak. The most random mash of games I know, but all gems in my opinion. Thoughts on this?
I love the specificness of this. I love that. Sloth Bush knew what he wanted. Knew what they wanted.
Sloth Bush doesn't mess around.
No. Do you know what's funny? I only really played Resident Evil Outbreak for the first time a few weeks ago, to be honest. Like, I dabbled, but I never really got into it proper.
Online one?
It is, and that's why I didn't want to play it too much, because it's like, you're not playing it right if you can't play it online, which, to be fair, when the game launched in the UK, we didn't have the online functionality as it was, which is terrible. But now the game, you can play it online on PC, there's a community out there for you to get to set up, play it with friends the way it's supposed to be, and oh, it's wonderful it is. So
I remember that, and this is just the old people podcast at this point, but I feel like I remember when Metal Gear... media of the same cultural talking point.
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
I remember when this thing launched and Metal Gear Solid 3's subsistence mode launched as well, and it was like, those were the first, like, for me at least, the first like online PS2 experiences, because I couldn't get Final Fantasy 11 because it was like a membership subscription thing, and so it was like Metal Gear Online and Resident Evil, but I couldn't get Resident Evil to work. There was like a membership thing or something. But yeah, if I was going to go down this list, remake one, delete one, play one for the first time, it's almost in that order. Remake Burnout 3, or just make Burnout 3 Revenge available. That game should be available.
Absolutely.
I never cared about Oblivion. I know it's a massive hot take, but I just really didn't jive with that game at all. I came on board with Elder Scrolls with Skyrim, and then I've never played. I managed to get online with Outbreak, so I'd have to play that for the first time.
I'd say I'm in a complete agreement. Like,
yes,
sacrilege though it may be, and this will probably be an unfolding talking point the longer I'm at What Culture. But like, Western RPGs just don't do it for me. Like, I appreciate what they do, but I just can't stick with them, and so. Sorry, everyone. I don't feel like I would miss Oblivion.
No, we should do a whole thing on that. Like, the idea of like fleshing that out, because I feel like there was that whole thing in the run-up to Final Fantasy 16 coming out, where Skillup, the YouTuber, was in that press conference for Square Enix, and they were talking about the term JRPG and what that's come to mean and what it has meant for the last few decades, and that distinction between the two. And I think that, like, yeah, like, it is interesting, because like, to a more like Eastern or Japanese audience, they're just making RPGs. It's just that we call them JRPGs, but they do have identifiable tenets and tropes and everything else. Like, I'm with you. Like, I prefer quote-unquote JRPGs, but like, still, I think that's interesting.
Perspective is everything, isn't it? Because we have that sort of unique perspective where we look at it from that direction and go, oh, interesting, international RPGs that come from overseas, whereas theirs is completely flipped. So it's definitely a weird thing.
Yeah. Question from Matthew McGowan, who says, what was your first platinum? Been playing through Rogue Legacy 2, which reminded me that the first Rogue Legacy was my first platinum trophy. Mine, I think, is actually Astro Boy or Bot or whatever you call it on the PlayStation 5. Because it kind of makes you get it. It's so easy. And I've never been a 100% person. I always get sick of collectibles. And what I play everything as much as I can, but there's always just... I mean, I've got loads of games on like 96% completion or whatever it is. Because I can never be bothered to go find the 100 pigeons or the 20 statues or whatever. I just don't care. I remember that part of me dying when I played Assassin's Creed and they wanted me to get all those flags in the original one. And I was like, I'm not doing it. And so it was that. It was GT4's pigeons as well, where I was like, I'm done with these things. And so I think it wasn't until the PlayStation 5 when I think it was my first platinum. I do have the it might be the Final Fantasy 7 remake. They're both in the same year. So it was that was just something where I worshipped Final Fantasy 7 so much that I was like, I'm going to rinse everything out of this remake. And that game's hard mode is a big old dick. But
I didn't do that one for that reason and some others, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I, like you, sort of come late to it, because I didn't have a PS3 and I didn't have a PS4 for the longest time because I was Team Xbox.
Yeah, so, as were we all.
Team 360. My first platinum was Horizon Zero Dawn, probably, unsurprisingly, I think, at this point. I did that, and then they did the update as well, where they got the New Game Plus and hard, Ultra Hard, and they put that in a separate folder, bless them. So I knocked those two out as well. That.
So we're not forced to go through the super
I'm
hard
I'm literally
mode
writing about how mad that makes me right now for something. so that was a thing. Before that, though, I'm like you, generally speaking, with achievements or trophies, I don't care too much unless I get to about 96%. Then I'm like, okay, I'm going to look and see what's left to see if I can do it.
I've never done that thing that some people do where they plan from the beginning, like, oh, I'm going
to
get everything.
Generally speaking, no. If I want to play a game, I want to just play the game, right? I'm not there to do the checklist. I think with Xbox, it's the same thing. I never got the sort of 1000G with many games, with the exception of Resident Evil 5. I did all of that. And then they did the DLC after I'd sold the game. And I was like, well, now I've got an incomplete list. You've added more achievements, you buggers.
I can tell you what my first 1000G was, which is funny for me and you doing this podcast. It was Lost Via Domus, the Lost tie-in game.
What?
Your face.
You know, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like, I was blacked out laughing so much there. The Lost tie-in game was called Via Domus, and they had, I think, all of the actors reprised the roles from the Lost TV show. But at the very end of that game, spoilers for a game from like 2004 or whatever it was, but that game ends with your character trying to escape the island, and then seeing, after you've met everybody and you've done all the trying to get off the island stuff, you make a raft, you're escaping, and then you look up into the sky and the plane crashes over you with everybody on, and then they cut to black. But it can't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense,
no.
Like the TV show. But I, as a massive Lost fan, 4815162342.com, I had to get everything. So I 100%ed that whole thing. And that was my first 100% completion.
That's wild.
But it was a good time. But yeah, first Platinums and stuff. I feel like, if you haven't got Astro Bot or Astro Boy, I'm blanking on what the full name of that thing is. I think it's Bot. That's a very easy platinum to get if you do want to get one. Question from Ash Trobot, who says, what's the best Metallica album and why is it Ride the Lightning?
Because it's Ride the Lightning.
It might be Ride the Lightning.
That title track, something else, isn't it?
I used to always say Ride the Lightning, but I probably is that. I just feel like it might just have to be the Black Album for what it means, what it meant to them,
what it did to
metal, what it did to hard rock, like
that's
what it did to music history.
Fair. I'm not a particularly... I don't really rate the first album at all. I know people go mad for it, but for me...
Really?
Just,
kill
like,
them all?
It doesn't matter. It just all... With the exception of maybe Seek and Destroy, they all kind of sound the same to me. Whereas Ride the Lightning,
true,
they really
yeah.
started to find their sound as well. So that absolutely helps. And then the other one I would shout out that goes up there, but it misses because of production a little bit, is Justice for All after that, where they started getting really proggy, and that appeals to a certain time in my life as well. There's some fantastic tracks on that record.
Did you ever listen to And Justice for Jason, the like the fan remake
yes,
thing?
Yes, somebody added the bass track back
yeah,
in.
Yeah, bringing the bass back up. I've got such a soft spot for that. I mean, that I think we might have talked about this. Talked about this week. I think my entry point for Metallica was Saint Anger, because I watched the Some Kind of Monster documentary and then came in on Saint Anger. So I sort of hit them at their worst and then went back over from there. I had heard For Whom the Bell Tolls, which is from Ride the Lightning, but then it was like because I hit them at their lowest, I just got to experience everything else, all the weird 90s era and everything else.
Very similar. I was not a fan for a long time. I just sort of poo-pooed it. It was like sort of old man metal. And then I did get into it. The most recent album would have been Saint Anger, just sort of coming up on Death Magnetic. And I also watched Some Kind of Monster with some friends. And do you have a story that you're like, this is so dumb and I shouldn't bother to tell it? But there's a part in that where they're sort of all sat in a room trying to come up with lyrics for Frantic. Do you remember this?
Oh, God,
And Lars Ulrich just starts going, searching for donuts, searching for donuts. So we wrote an entire version of Frantic about donuts. So there you go. That's what me and my friends got up to when we were 19, because we were cool.
That's the thing that you were. That thing with the that the therapist comes up with, where it's like, my lifestyle determines my death style.
Oh, that was like, off of him, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Phil Towle or Toll. But teenage me was like, yeah. Oh, that's the best lyric you're ever going to write, Metallica. That, you can't get any more truthful than that, guys.
It's a very Metallica lyric, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got Metallica tattoo at this point, so I'm a large fan. But when did you come down on the new album before we move on? Have you listened to 72
songs? I've actually not listened to it yet. I listened to the singles and I was like, yeah, so it's all right. You know.
It's a weird one. It was very much a grower. Like I really liked Hardwired, at least the first half, and then I loved Spit Out the Bone.
Spit Out the Bone's
new one,
great.
Yeah, I think Spit Out the Bone is the best thing they've written since like the old albums. Like, if you're going to pick one specific song, like, it's just so complete. Even though Hammett's solos are still abysmal. But what can you do? Man's improvising everything. So there is that. Question from Willie Araya, who says, since the Activision Blizzard deal is the gift that keeps on giving, what are our thoughts on the juicy behind-the-scenes stuff we've learned about the industry across these hearings, like Sony first-party budgets or Microsoft predictions for the PlayStation 5 Pro? Have a lovely and very nice weekend. Yeah, general thoughts on this stuff. I've not been following it day-to-day. It's just a general thing.
Yeah, I have tried to not follow it too much because it's exhausting, isn't it? Just like this never-ending story, and you don't want to read... Who wants to read all the sort of legalese of it? But, like, at the same time, whilst it's exhausting, stuff like this is great.
Oh, yeah.
You're just like, oh, here we go. Like,
just give me the back and forths. They're great.
Recently, they were talking about the specs for the next Nintendo console as well, and the expectation.
Yes.
I know you guys talked about it. You and Josh talked about it on a news video, I think, talking about sort of the expectation of the Switch 2 or whatever and how that might interact with future Call of Duty titles.
Just them randomly leaking it in the middle
of
the
conversation. Yeah, that's the first time we've heard anything, I think, for sure, about
been a while.
The
yeah, there was
console.
Like, there was a Jason Schreier had a thing a couple of years ago where someone had, like, a warehouse was like, yeah, we're working on it, and then...
Yeah,
like,
but that's the same thing what we were saying this morning about, oh yeah, we're making Elder Scrolls 6. Well, yeah, you're not going to not make a new console. Like, we're not going to be playing the Switch in 2042.
Yes, like, yeah, it's always going to come out at some point. The most recent thing, at least I think it's the most recent that is at the time of recording, is The Last of Us 2's budget being $220 million.
Yeah.
And that's sort of opening up this conversation of, like, you know, is the AAA market at that level sustainable, which is the thing that, I'm blanking on the dude's name, but the guy that left before Jim Ryan came in at PlayStation, that guy said, like, you know, the amount of money they're spending on first-party stuff isn't sustainable, and they would be better served trying to, you know, pay for X number of other smaller games instead, because you're putting so many eggs in those baskets, and if they don't land, it's just disastrous. Obviously, in Sony's case, they have landed for so long and so many in a row. But at the same time, I mean, I massively back that. I would rather you took GTA 6's budget and just made 20 Rockstar games or something like that.
I absolutely get that, and it does remind me of earlier days where it felt like there were, it was a less divide between the four big games of the year that all they put all the eggs in that basket. And then, you know, it used to feel like there was just more titles of varying different size and importance, whereas now it's like, here's the big ones. The only problem now is that we obviously, as an industry, we're suffering a lot with games that are just not finished. They just don't work as it is. So what is going to happen if that was the approach? You get just a legion of games that all come out in even worse state than we've got now. Like, I just
think that, like, it's, I mean, on the Xbox side, obviously they don't even remotely have the level of polish, like Redfall being their most recent thing. Also, Sean Layden's the dude I was thinking of. You can go look up all of his quotes coming out of Sony. I think his perspective on the industry is fascinating, because he's been there on the front lines greenlighting these projects, and then himself saying, like, yeah, this is nuts, the amount of money they need to put into these games to maintain this bar. It's kind of crazy. But overall, I mean, there's that thing. There's, like, the budget side of it. There's the way that, like, the first-party catalogs are coming together. But I think overall, the way that Xbox's like approach to this has been hilarious, where they're just sort of like, we're terrible at this. We're in third place. We're selling nothing. We need, like, and they are as well. I mean,
I appreciate
made people
the
look
honesty.
At
the... Yeah. It is nice, isn't it?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But it's a weird thing to, like, it then made people sort of retroactively look at the last sort of 20 odd years of Xbox and be like, oh, okay, yeah. Like, I mean, I would think that it was ridiculous that they didn't acknowledge how runaway the 360 was. There was so much energy around that, you know, era. They did so, so well. And, like, yeah, they fell off at the very end, but, like, they just had to ignore that for the sake of making their case in the legal document, that they were like, well, we need this Activision deal because we're just so terrible at everything else, and that'll give us the games, and we don't have the games and everything else. And I was just
not
like,
the sympathy vote. That's what that is.
Yeah, I was like, you guys are not coming out of this. Like, please, can we have Activision to get us through? So, yeah, I think the legalese side of it, or like the legal posturing side of it, has been like fascinating, because it's been a lot of Sony just going like, we hate them and we hate this, and just squish it into the ground. And then Xbox being like, you see how titanic they are? They don't let us live. And I'm just like, that's kind of a hilarious approach.
It's hilarious, but it's also very sad when you realize they're just two big corporations crying like babies a bit. So it's hard to really care. But
true. We'll see how it all shakes out. I imagine it's going to go on for another couple of years. Like, I just, it's the fact that the various different countries, some people have blocked it, some people have approved it. Yeah. I just, it's such a thing. It's kind of all hinging on the FTC, like, specifics at the minute, and whether they block it and whether that, because that's such a big entity. And then it was like the UK's CMA have never had a monopoly ruling overturned, which is a whole thing. But anyway, we'll see what happens. It'll be with us for the next few months.
We're going to be talking about it for the next few years. So
yeah. Almost definitely. Question from Jack Asbury, who says, UBP, UBP, UBP. Seeing the Ubisoft roadmap for Assassin's Creed in the video that me and Josh did is giving me massive franchise fatigue. Why does it feel like Assassin's Creed is being given the same level of care as something like Zelda or The Last of Us? Even Call of Duty feels like it gets more love than Assassin's Creed. Also, Rhino messaged in and said, will we take a multiverse where Ubisoft never made Assassin's Creed if it meant all their future games weren't hampered by the Ubisoft formula that they now have?
So,
can you imagine?
Yeah, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
just the Ubisoft of old, where you have like a bigger variety of game mechanics, a bigger variety of IP in general, and they're just not trying to put a tower and a map unlock system in everything.
I'm gonna set some people off here. Remember Rayman?
Yeah,
you know,
Rayman Legends, Rayman Origins. Incredible.
Yeah, what happened to that? I don't particularly Assassin's Creed doesn't do a whole lot for me. Like, I know it's obviously got its super fans, who some of them, which I don't know, maybe are really excited about the roadmap. It certainly seems there are people out there like, cool, you know, especially because of the games that they've announced do sound pretty cool, like the Japanese one and whatever else. But yeah, to say, I don't know, it seems odd to be like, why isn't it being given the same care as Zelda, which takes 6 years, and The Last of Us, which is this, you know, the artistic integrity of that game is pretty solid to a point. It's like, I don't know, it's not the same kind of franchise to me. It's Ubisoft have always been, since Assassin's Creed's beginning, we were just like, how can we squeeze this as much as possible? Like, it's never been treated with that kind of reverence.
No, which is, that's one of the things on, like, you talk about like GTA or something, or like Rockstar stuff. It's like, because at the top you've got Take-Two publishing, and it was like Strauss Zelnick saying like, well, if we hammer this, then it ruins the popularity of the brand, the valuability of it. Like, you need to rest it.
I should clarify as well, I don't think that it doesn't deserve that. It's just Ubisoft have never treated it like that, so I don't think they could dial it back and be like, Assassin's Creed is a big deal. Unless they took a 6 year break, then maybe, but they're not going to do that.
No, and they're in such a terrible place right now.
Yeah, they need it.
I remember when Ghost Recon Breakpoint came out and sold so disastrously. It was like 93%. They lost like 93% of their operating income or something. It was like some insane statistic for just how much money that thing cost them, and it didn't make anything back or whatever. And then it's like Far Cry's kind of just in a rut at the minute. Assassin's Creed's kind of there. But it's like, we're talking about a whole range of like middling, like general energies around these IP. And then they just have so many boxes to tick and shareholders to please that it's like, well, I guess we'll just greenlight 11 games. Like, there's 11 Assassin's Creed games in production to varying degrees of production. just to attempt to sort of like coast by or try and get by. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like Assassin's Creed doesn't mean anything anymore. Like it's malleable to a fault. And the Patrice Desilets, who originally set it in motion, is just nowhere to be seen anyway. So it's not like it's going to have any sort of authored feel to it. But yeah, an alternate universe where all the Ubisoft forming stuff didn't happen, then assumedly you'd get more luscious 2D animated stuff.
You get quality over quantity at the very least.
Yes. Do you remember the era we had, like, it was Rayman Legends and Rayman Origins, and we had Valiant Hearts, and we had the Child of Light. Like, they had that Ubi art
Child
program.
Of Light! What a game!
Yeah. And it was just, like, that really, like, gorgeous little run where they were just sort of prioritizing artistic, like, and visual styles and aesthetics and everything. I kind of feel like that's what EA's Originals program is at the minute.
Yeah.
And it's not as consistent, but, like, yeah, it's just, Ubisoft could have been, maybe they can call it back, but they're not in a great place at the minute.
Yeah.
Question from Pinky, who says, I'd love to hear what we all think about the Red Dead remake news. Also, would we be able to tell him anything about the upcoming Baldur's Gate 3? Give me all the D&D, he says. The D&D details, I assume. Now, I'm waiting for Baldur's Gate. I was a Dark Alliance kid back in whatever year that was. But where are you on Baldur's Gate, and what do you think of the Red Dead remake?
I'm not much of a PC gamer, really, so it's kind of outside of my radar. I say really, like, at all. Like, so it's outside of my radar. That being said, I have friends that are, like, super keen on it, and the more they talk about it, the more
it
I'm
is
like,
a big deal.
I'd love to try it. I think my PC would just, like, cascade down into hell if I tried to boot it up. It would just, like, sink through the earth.
Well, I saw the thing. It's on consoles, but I saw that thing that, like, Xbox, Microsoft had to send some engineers to Larian Studios to get the Xbox version to work or something, so it must be pretty hefty.
Yeah, I guess I'd be tempted to give it a go on console, but you just know historically it feels like it has to be played on PC to get the full sort of, you know, weight out of it and feel like the right way
to play.
You
don't want to pilot a cursor around a screen with an analog stick?
No, it's my favorite thing to do.
Wakes me up in the morning. Can't wait.
Yeah, precisely. So yeah, I'd like to keep my eyes on it. Whether or not I'll play it, I don't know, but yeah, it depends.
I'm kind of hoping it's like a more, because I tried Diablo 3 10 years ago, it didn't click for me, and I've got Diablo 4, but I'm not bored by it, but it's so repetitive, and I kind of just hope that Baldur's Gate is a bit more of like a focused character build.
Feeling it's more story driven and stuff like that, right, isn't it?
Yeah, so there was some statistic about like thousands of hours of cutscenes or something.
Wow,
nuts, and I was just like, something crazy about how much like stuff they've put in there, and obviously it is a big deal and everything. Red Dead remake. Were you a Red Dead fan?
Yeah, I've dabbled. I really love the aesthetic. I mean, who doesn't love the original game? It's fantastic. I've still not played the sequel. It's sitting on my shelf. I'm just daunted by it because it's just like, I know that it takes millions of hours to complete. And when am I, if I start, when am I going to find the time to really
If you ever have trouble sleeping, play Red Dead Redemption 2.
I am severely tempted on a regular basis to give it a go. But yeah, it's finding the time amongst everything else that I want and need to play. But I think it's a good idea. I think they should do it. Like, it's a good...
Might as well.
Yeah, as long as, you know, they give it enough attention that it comes... They don't need to do a whole lot to it, I don't think. Just bring it up to standard.
Not really.
That'd be a good holdover until GTA 6, right? So
yeah. It's like, do they make it play like Red Dead Redemption 2? Is it weightier and stuff like that? Like, I kind of... did you play Red Dead Revolver?
No.
Whatever it was. I would love... I think that's on... Yeah, it's like, yeah, it was like Capcom or whatever. It's like, it's on the PlayStation Classics collection thing. Like, not the one that you get for the monthly fee, but it's on that. They did that run of like old school PlayStation Classics that are still on the PlayStation Store, like Ape Escape 2 or whatever. And yeah, I would take like a sort of up-resed or smoothed over 60fps version of that, because it's such a different take on a like a Western style game. It's very arcadey and everything. I think that would be kind of cool. Question from Lord Cola Kanth, who says, pick three franchises, one that needs a reboot, one that needs a remake, and one that needs a straight sequel. Gut feeling, Si. What do you think?
Okay. One that needs a remake, Legacy of Kain.
Yep.
Soul Reaver, specifically, obviously, we'll start there. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Everything already exists for it. You don't really need to change anything. Let's just go back to where we were and just start kicking it off again.
Meaty combat.
Fantastic, unique visual style that's still not really ever been aped properly. Thankfully, I guess. One that needs a straight remake, straight sequel for me immediately, Viva Pinata. It's never going to happen. I kind of don't want it to happen because the Rare team is, you know, it's not the Rare that it was. Everyone's left. And so it's not. But I love those games.
What a pick,
games.
Though.
I've put hundreds of hours into both of those games.
I always had all my friends play Viva Pinata and I never did. So I've still never touched Viva Pinata. I'm assuming it's on the Xbox like Game Pass thing. Maybe it's on the archive.
I think so. On the Rare replay, I think, as well. So it should be accessible enough. It needs a Switch port. That's the reality for it. It'd be great on Switch, but...
Considering that Xbox and Nintendo are trying to, like, pretend that they're friends, that would be something to sort of put across
that.
There.
Just do that for me, please.
What would you fully reboot?
Ah, that one. I'm having troubles with that. You go. Mm. I don't even think about...
Legacy of Kain is the first thing that came to mind for me. I think I don't know if I would put that in the reboot thing because it's been so long that I'd be curious if you gave that to a new team and just sort of say, okay, what kind of stories do you want to tell in this world? And maybe you don't play as Raziel or Kain. And maybe, I mean, that's what they tried with Dead Son. And you saw, I forget what the name of the character was in Dead Son, but I like the idea of maybe telling a story of a different vampire who's bitten by Kain and then sort of like doesn't fully turn or something. And maybe you're just, you know, because Nosgoth's such a cool environment. Like, I love Legacy of Kain so much. I'm like, maybe you flesh that out. And then maybe you have to fight Kain again, or you discover there's this wraith who might help you, and it's Raziel, and whatever. I'm like, maybe you can do that, and it sort of like does like a almost like how the Star Wars sequel trilogy started, where it's like we're sort of new people and we're interfacing with all these elements that
That's
were left behind,
idea.
Kind of thing. Thank you. That might be cool. A straight sequel. I'm going with Sifu. I absolutely effing love Sifu from a couple of years ago. And they've just finished their season pass stuff, and they've like, you know, that game's been treated really, really well and everything. And I just want more of that game. I love the combat mechanics. I love all the environmental finishes and everything. And I think there's more you can do with that. I just miss martial arts in games. I want to roundhouse kick more stuff in the face. And so I just want that. Games that need a remake, I'll go Final Fantasy VI. Only because I've just finished it, and I
what
did.
What a shout!
Well, see, so I want them because the thing is, if you play the Pixel Remaster, you know the opera scene in Final Fantasy VI, which obviously it's a big old thing. In the Pixel Remaster, they do that in the HD 2D Octopath engine, just to like to make it look all 3D. The sprites are 2D, but everything else is 3D, and it's like a nice little glimpse into like what it would look like if that was done properly. And I forget the name of the specific dev, but there was a report that someone within Square Enix, there was a petition had done the rounds or something like that. A group of people within Square Enix had apparently asked the higher ups if they could remake Final Fantasy VI, and it just seems like they know exactly what they're doing, and you get enough of a little tease of it in VI itself if you go back to the Pixel Remaster. So I would take that. I would remake Final Fantasy VI in the HD 2D engine.
Yes.
And I think that would be like one of the easiest things to do.
Yeah, slam dunk, isn't it? Because you don't want to do too much to that game. I don't think you want to do like a full 3D thing with it because you've got, you know, worries there that you're going to ruin it some fashion. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I always thought it's because 3 and 4 got DS remakes and they just kind of stopped. Yep. And it was like, yeah, okay, where's 6? Where's the, you know, there's a lot of love for 6.
Yeah.
They've not done anything.
I think like
with
6 is like kind of like, if you talk about the overall like Final Fantasy community or whatever, 6 always seems to be the one that gets that reaction of like, oh my God, 6. And I only just went through it across the last few weeks, and I still get that. I still think it's like super charming. The music's gorgeous.
Yep.
I had a thoroughly awesome time with it. So it's almost like the real fan favorite. Like the wider mainstream favorite is 7, but it's like if we're really getting serious, it's probably 6.
Totally. I've got a weird reboot for you then.
Do it.
they need to do something with F-Zero.
Yes.
That's obvious. And I think the worry is that what happens when you just make a new racing game, how can you create a new franchise out of that? They need to do something with it. I think if you bolt on a different genre to it, and maybe take advantage of Captain Falcon as a character and the fact that he's apparently a bounty hunter, and implement some kind of open world thing where you're going around doing stuff.
It's like Star Fox Adventures, but
it doesn't have to be super gritty and dark and violent, obviously, because it's a Nintendo game, but like that kind of cyberpunky style with him wandering around a city where, you know, all the, like with wrestling, where it's ridiculous, where all the disputes in the world are, you know, resolved by pinning someone to the mat for 3 seconds and then they get over it. This world, everyone's obsessed with racing, right? That's how everything is solved. So they need to make a big open F-Zero that really focuses on the racing.
Put wrestling
in
it.
Lets you do wrestling as well, yeah.
Let Captain Falcon do the Falcon punch.
Yeah, exactly.
You can do an Orange Cassidy style punch or whatever. I think that would be, oh man, that would be great. Like if he's like trying to like solve a murder or something and it's like everyone knows bits of information like per region and he has to race them. I'll not tell you unless you beat me.
Exactly. And then you Falcon punch the suspect at the end.
You fucking punch the information out of them and they won't reveal it. That's such a shout. There was a quote doing the rounds from someone at Nintendo as well talking about how they always wanted to do more with F-Zero but they couldn't because Mario Kart gets the spotlight.
Exactly.
So it feels like, you know, F-Zero's always been out there.
You need to do something new.
Yeah, like, why not? A question from Elfar Oliver, who says, wouldn't we rather prefer a Days Gone Online game instead of The Last of Us Factions, which Naughty Dog seem to be effing up? They already had an open world, hordes, more enemy types, good traversal, and shops for items. Honestly, I just want another Days Gone. Love us all and keep it up. Love you as well. What do you think of the Days Gone versus The Last of Us-ing of the modern world?
I can't believe that that doesn't seem like an obvious thing. Like, how has that only just gone ding? You know, like, of course. Yeah. It's such... that is just so much more of a perfect fit than The Last of Us having a multiplayer game. Like, it just...
you could have, like, random raid stuff as well, that the hordes you were going up against, maybe you come upon a player who's, like, fighting them or something.
Yes, exactly.
And you join in. I don't
know. Yeah, that sort of, like, asymmetrical, where you've got different things going on. You can not just fighting each other, but there's an AI element involved. Yeah, that fits Days Gone so much more than The Last of Us for me, which... even as someone who's not, like, as crazy on it as some people are, and I do enjoy the story aspects of it, like... some of that is a little bit sacred because the story is really important. So you shouldn't, you know, just throw in, oh, we're going to do a multiplayer game. We're going to do a battle royale. Like, you could do some silly stuff with Days Gone because it's not quite as serious.
Yeah, that's my
putting
thoughts.
It lightly. So, yeah.
Well,
it
I mean, it's not, there's not as much expectation. Like, it's like, no, it, I was always, when they announced, you know, doing more stuff with factions, I like Last of Us's original multiplayer. But then when you start talking about live services and talking about fleshing it out and everything else, it's like they're not known for that at all. And obviously, that's the story doing the rounds. Anyway, is that it's been hard to get it off the ground, and Bungie have analysed what they're going to do and it's not going to work and whatever. But yeah, there's way less risk with Days Gone. I think the Days Gone IP, if it is even regarded as this wider thing, is just dead at this point. Like, I mean, it's, I forget what you call the creative director, but he's had some harsh words to say about the whole thing. So
not a very pleasant man, it seems.
Doesn't seem like it. And it's like, yeah, he seems to just be, I think he's left anyway. So it's like, I don't even think, even if he was offered something, he probably wouldn't come back. Next question from Steve, who says, what game has the best character creator in terms of being able to create exactly what you picture in your mind? I've asked around and mostly heard Soul Calibur or Saints Row. I've got to go wrestling stuff. It's got to be
right
WWE,
answer.
2K22, 2K23, whatever it is. I mean, wrestling games have always set the standard. Not the AEW game, because that's got a terrible character creator. You get like five faces and nothing else, and you can't wear a shirt in the ring. But the WWE ones are really good. And so I would go with that. I was pleasantly surprised returning to wrestling video games after like 20 years, how stellar that stuff is. And you can share them all online and everything else. But any picks from yourself?
Yeah, exactly the same. I stepped away from the WWE games for a few years, and I got a little bit of time with 2K20. And pff, I don't know, 90% of that time was spent creating a character. You just, but I loved it. I was having so much fun messing around with it. And, you know, the fact that back in the day, it was so simple. There was so little you could do, even less than the AEW game. But now you can do like alternate attires. So it takes even longer. And I love that. I was like, oh, I'm going to have a character. She's wearing green now and she's wearing pink when this one. It's like, yeah, it was great. And then I played some of the story mode and I was like, loading screens are killing me. But the character creator is fantastic. And that sort of level needs to be in everything. Or maybe quite, maybe not that deep, but something approaching it.
I'll tell you what I really like, which no game's necessarily done it perfectly yet, is the 2K face capture thing they have. And it's in like
those,
the NBA games. And and they try it and it never really works.
Terrible.
It always sort of just takes a picture of your face and slaps it on a model.
It's so bad,
and it's
it?
Like my nostrils are my eyeballs. And I'm like, that's not even remotely what I'm where my head is. But I like the idea of that. I got it quite close to working. I didn't even think which game it was now. Maybe one of the NBA games, where I was like, oh, that's kind of me. And I sort of added a beard and stuff. And so I think there's potential there, but they seem to have like abandoned it. Is it Game Face or something it's called? It seems like they've abandoned
that sounds
it
right. Soul Calibur is absolutely a shout, by the way.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's been good for a long time since like... Even 2 at the time was like, this is really cool. Like, I'm really enjoying this, you know.
So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with the Saints Row as well. Like, I mean, I think, like, I didn't play... I mean, the 2022 one was pretty abysmal, but I hold Saints Row 3 and 4 way up there. Like, I had a lot of fun with them. Final question from Darren Martin, who says, wanting to try more indie titles, could I get a top 3 indies each that I can play on PlayStation 5? Much love. Now, this is always one of those things where it's impossible to then think of something.
Yeah, I mean, all of mine are so obvious.
That's fine. I'll go what my gut/brain serves up. First of all, is definitely Dredge. That's one of my favorite games of the year so far. Just it's like a fishing game, but there's so much more going on. It's got a really kind of dark, spooky, Lovecraftian heart to it, where there's more stuff going on underneath the surface than you think, and there's more story there than you think. And I love the way they roll it out, and the various like abilities that you get over time are really, really good. That game hits such a stride. It's quite short. It's only like 8 to 10 hours long anyway. But it hits such a great stride where you're sort of going out in the day, you're finding out some little secrets, you're doing a few little missions, you're talking to some characters about what was happening in the islands before you arrived there, and this mysterious book that seems to have gone missing and whatever, and then you're like banking your catches of the day and unlocking new abilities and stuff like that. And I think that game comes together so well For that sort of middle few hours, I was just, I could not put that thing down. I'll also shout out, on behalf of Josh Brown, Stay Out of the House, which is a PlayStation 1 throwback thing.
He came running towards me to tell me to play that, basically. Like,
it's great. So I got that because he wouldn't shut up about it. But it's genuinely really, really good. That's a first-person horror game. It's set across, I think, four acts, maybe five. It was originally sort of released in chunks, and now it's available on PS5.
Oh, is it on PS5? No, amazing.
Yeah, yeah. That going in, it's ridiculous how smoothly it runs, because obviously all the processing power is like freed up, but it is an old school PS1 looking chunky as hell game. But it's great. And then I mentioned Sifu before, which I cannot recommend Sifu enough. If you like good parry counter-based gameplay where you're mastering a set of moves, the game will hand you your ass first, but when you get used to it, it's such a fun, like, tactile kind of great combat system. And once you get that stuff down, like revisiting those old levels and refighting those beginner enemies that initially, like, you know, were hard or whatever, and just mashing their face into the concrete, it's great. And so I loved overcoming Sifu, so those would be mine.
I'm gonna start off with horror as well. Say Signalis.
Yeah, Signalis. That's a great show.
Some compatriots of mine did a Horror Game of the Year award show. Actually, our friend Ash Millman is going to be part of next year's as well. And their Horror Game of the Year last year was Signalis. And yeah, not like Stay Out of the House, but also it is a PS1 throwback.
Reputation-wise, it feels like that was the... like, it feels like Stay Out of the House is the Signalis of 2023.
Yeah, I could see that.
The throwback horror, yeah.
It's definitely got shades of, you know, MGS1 or even just the Metal Gear games. And, you know, Resident Evil sort of inventory management. And it's scary as... another really obvious one is Hollow Knight.
It's just a
beautiful and punishing game. Just like, I did not get very far with it. But
I've still never finished Hollow Knight, but I keep going back to it. I've made a save next to when you fight like those three bosses at once, and I'd have to like run, go down some chasm to get there, and then I get wiped out, and I go, I can't keep doing this to myself.
Yeah, that was definitely, because it's sort of a Metroidvania and it expands out in various different ways, that was definitely one of the choke points I got to. Like, and then you go somewhere else and find another boss you can't beat. But the visuals are just really nice, got a wonderful aesthetic, the music's great. So yeah, if you like a challenge, definitely. And in terms of time investment and sort of reward, can't go wrong with Hades. Another really obvious one, I know. But like,
the hell did I forget
Hades again? Same thing. Great music, looks great, sounds great, plays great. You could very easily put 100 hours into it because it's a roguelike.
Hades is knock all mine off the recommender. Hades is what you need.
Hades is
maybe
the
like
one.
Hades and Sifu, like just the top two. Fair. Hades is a gorgeous game, like Supergiant, never miss anyway. Love Bastion, love Transistor, love I'm forgetting the name. I was going to say Fury, but the basketball one they did that I'm blanking the name on. But I'm doing a motion now, which it's an audio podcast, so no one's going to see it, but it's a basketball thing. People will find it. It was phenomenal. That was one of my games of the year a few years ago, but it's so well written. They're such a great artistically minded studio, and the music doesn't miss. Darren Korb is an incredible composer. Hades is a great shout. For now, speaking of great shouts, it's every single person who sent a question or a thought or whatever in. Massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. And this has been the Entitled Panda podcast. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Cy White.
Thanks, everyone. It's always a fun time.
I know. Thank you very much for turning up, and we'll catch you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.